File 25.
It was undoubtedly true that the national powers of resistance, in everything concerning Germanism as such, were much weaker among the German Catholic clergy than among their non-German confrères, especially the Czechs. And only an ignorant person could be unaware of the fact that it scarcely ever entered the mind of the German clergy to take the offensive on behalf of German interests. But at the same time, everybody who is not blind to facts must admit that all this should be attributed to a characteristic under which we Germans have been all doomed to suffer. This characteristic shows itself in our objective way of regarding our own nationality as if it were something that lay outside of us. While the Czech priest adopted a subjective attitude towards his own people, and only an objective attitude towards the Church, the German parish priest showed a subjective devotion to his Church and remained objective in regard to his nation. It is a phenomenon which, unfortunately for us, can be observed occurring in exactly the same way in thousands of other cases. It is by no means a peculiar inheritance from Catholicism, but it is something in us which does not take long to gnaw the vitals of almost every institution, especially institutions of state and those which have ideal aims. Take, for example, the attitude of our state officials in regard to the efforts made for bringing about a national resurgence, and compare that attitude with the stand which the public officials of any other nation would have taken in such a case. Or is it to be believed that the military officers of any other country in the world would refuse to come forward on behalf of the national aspirations, but would rather hide behind the phrase "authority of the state," as has been the case in our country during the last 5 years, and has even been deemed a meritorious attitude? Or let us take another example. In regard to the Jewish problem, do not the two Christian denominations take up a standpoint today which does not respond to the national exigencies or even the interests of religion? Consider the attitude of a Jewish rabbi towards any question, even one of quite insignificant importance, concerning the Jews as a race, and compare his attitude with that of the majority of our clergy, whether Catholic or Protestant. We observe the same phenomenon whenever it is a matter of standing up for some abstract idea. Authority of the state, democracy, pacifism, international solidarity, etc. All such notions become rigid, dogmatic concepts with us, and the more vital the general necessities of the nation, the more will they be judged exclusively in the light of those concepts. This unfortunate habit of looking at all national demands from the viewpoint of a preconceived notion makes it impossible for us to see the subjective side of a thing which objectively contradicts one's own doctrine. It finally leads to a complete reversion in the relation of means to an end. Any attempt at a national revival will be opposed if the preliminary condition of such a revival be that a bad and pernicious regime must first of all be overthrown, because such an action will be considered as a violation of the authority of the state. In the eyes of those who take that standpoint, the authority of the state is not a means which is there to serve an end, but rather, to the mind of the dogmatic believer in objectivity, it is an end in itself, and he looks upon that as sufficient apology for his own miserable existence. Such people would raise an outcry if, for instance, anyone should attempt to set up a dictatorship, even though the man responsible for it were Frederick the Great, and even though the politicians for the time being, who constituted the parliamentary majority, were small and incompetent men, or maybe even on a lower grade of inferiority. Because to such sticklers for abstract principles, the law of democracy is more sacred than the welfare of the nation. In accordance with his principles, one of these gentry will defend the worst kind of tyranny, though it may be leading a people to ruin, because it is the fleeting embodiment of the authority of the state. And another will reject even a highly beneficent government if it should happen not to be in accord with his own notion of democracy. In the same way, our German pacifist will remain silent while the nation is groaning under an oppression which is being exercised by a sanguinary military power, when this state of affairs gives rise to active resistance, because such resistance means the employment of physical force, which is against the spirit of the pacifist associations. The German International Socialist may be rooked and plundered by his comrades in all the other countries of the world in the name of solidarity, but he responds with fraternal kindness and never thinks of trying to get his own back, or even of defending himself. And why? Because he is a German. It may be unpleasant to dwell on such truths, but if something is to be changed, we must start by diagnosing the disease. The phenomenon which I have just described also accounts for the feeble manner in which German interests are promoted and defended by a section of the clergy. Such conduct is not the manifestation of a malicious intent, nor is it the outcome of orders given from above, as we say, but such a lack of national grit and determination is due to defects in our educational system. For, instead of inculcating in the youth a lively sense of their German nationality, the aim of the educational system is to make the youth prostrate themselves in homage to the idea, as if the idea were an idol. The education which makes them the devotees of such abstract notions as democracy, international socialism, pacifism, etc., is so hard and fast and exclusive, and, operating as it does from within bulwarks, is so purely subjective that in forming their general picture of outside life as a whole, they are fundamentally influenced by these a priori notions. But, on the other hand, the attitude towards their own German nationality has been very objective from youth upwards. The pacifist, in so far as he is a German, who surrenders himself subjectively, body and soul, to the dictates of his dogmatic principles, will always first consider the objective right or wrong of a situation when danger threatens his own people, even though that danger be grave and unjustly wrought from outside. But he will never take his stand in the ranks of his own people and fight for and with them from the sheer instinct of self-preservation. Another example may further illustrate how far this applies to the different religious denominations. Insofar as its origin and tradition are based on German ideals, Protestantism of itself defends those ideals better. but it fails the moment it is called upon to defend national interests which do not belong to the sphere of its ideals and traditional development, or which, for some reason or other, may be rejected by that sphere. Therefore, Protestantism will always take its part in promoting German ideals as far as concerns moral integrity or national education, when the German spiritual being or language or spiritual freedom are to be defended, because these represent the principles on which Protestantism itself is grounded. But this same Protestantism violently opposes every attempt to rescue the nation from the clutches of its mortal enemy, because the Protestant attitude towards the Jews is more or less rigidly and dogmatically fixed. And yet this is the first problem which has to be solved, unless all attempts to bring about a German resurgence or to raise the level of the nation's standing are doomed to turn out nonsensical and impossible. During my sojourn in Vienna, I had ample leisure and opportunity to study this problem, without allowing any prejudices to intervene, and in my daily intercourse with people, I was able to establish the correctness of the opinion I formed by the test of thousands of instances. In this focus, where the greatest varieties of nationality had converged, it was quite clear and open to everybody to see that the German pacifist was always and exclusively the one who tried to consider the interests of his own nation objectively. But you could never find a Jew who took a similar attitude towards his own race. Furthermore, I found that only the German socialist is international, in the sense that he feels himself obliged not to demand justice for his own people in any other manner than by whining and wailing to his international comrades. Nobody could ever reproach Czechs or Poles or other nations with such conduct. In short, even at that time, already I recognized that this evil is only partly a result of the doctrines taught by socialism, pacifism, etc., but mainly the result of our totally inadequate system of education, the defects of which are responsible for the lack of devotion to our own national ideals. Therefore, the first theoretical argument advanced by the pan-German leaders as the basis of their offensive against Catholicism was quite untenable. The only way to remedy the evil I have been speaking of is to train the Germans from youth upwards to an absolute recognition of the rights of their own people, instead of poisoning their minds while they are still only children, with the virus of this curbed objectivity, even in matters concerning the very maintenance of our own existence. The result of this would be that the Catholic in Germany, just as in Ireland, Poland, or France, will be a German first and foremost. But all this presupposes a radical change in the national government. The strongest proof in support of my contention is furnished by what took place at that historical juncture when our people were called for the last time before the tribunal of history to defend their own existence in a life-or-death struggle. As long as there was no lack of leadership in the higher circles, the people fulfilled their duty and obligations to an overwhelming extent. Whether Protestant pastor or Catholic priest, each did his very utmost in helping our powers of resistance to hold out, not only in the trenches, but also, and even more so, at home. During those years, and especially during the first outburst of enthusiasm, in both religious camps there was one undivided and sacred German empire for whose preservation and future existence they all prayed to heaven. The Pan-German movement in Austria ought to have asked itself this one question: is the maintenance of the German element in Austria possible or not, as long as that element remains within the fold of the Catholic faith? If that question should have been answered in the affirmative, then the political party should not have meddled in religious and denominational questions. But if the question had to be answered in the negative, then a religious reformation should have been started, and not a political party movement,